Hey everybody, welcome back to Bikes and Big Ideas on the Blister Podcast Network. I'm David Golay, the bike editor at Blister and host of the show, and you can check out everything we are doing and reviewing over at blisterreview.com. This week, I am joined by Sarah Sturm to tell the story and talk about her rise through the gravel world. And as we will get into shortly here, it's an unconventional path to bike racing stardom, but Sarah tells the story really well and really entertainingly, and along the way, we get into it about just the overall state and health of gravel racing as a sport, the ways that it has evolved and grown very rapidly over the course of its short time in the spotlight, and where things are headed from here. And Sarah also share some candid thoughts on struggling to learn new things as an adult and the challenges of not being good at something that you've put a ton of effort into and how to make peace with that and a whole lot more. It's a fun conversation. Sarah's hilarious and delightful, and I think you're really going to enjoy it. I sure did. So with that, let's get right to my conversation with Sarah Sturm. Well, Sarah, great to sit down and chat. How are you doing and where are you this afternoon?
Yeah, I'm good. I actually just got back to my home base, which is Durango, Colorado, yesterday after about a month down training in Tucson and Sedona. So I'm pretty stoked to be back home for a whopping 2 days before I fly out to my first race.
Perfect. Yeah.
Just... Yep. The lifestyle. It's glamorous, let me tell you.
Yeah. Well, all that time in Arizona doesn't sound so bad, but.
No, it's, I can't complain. I did. I got a lot of good work done and, yeah, I don't know. I've just like never really like dedicated like a full like month to training. I usually kind of bop around to things that are interesting to me to keep the motivation high, but it was actually kind of, maybe that means I'm getting old. The motivation was there and I just enjoyed having like a home base at a friend's little casita, and my dog and Dylan hung out for a little bit and got some like pretty big like 30-hour weeks in back to back to back. So hopefully it'll pay off.
Well, yeah, damn. Lot to kind of
yeah,
tease apart there. But I guess one of the things that sort of drew my attention to kind of having you on the show and made me want to do this episode is just that I think you've, I guess I think fair to say, taken a somewhat unconventional path into your current place in the gravel world. And I think I've talked well in a number of venues about just your, about that and your approach to racing and the status of that gravel racing world. And just kind of wanted to hear that story a bit and check in about what's going on in gravel racing these days as well. So to kick that off though, can you just sort of tell us about how you made your way into gravel racing after what was, I think fair to say, a bit of a late start in a way?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I'm like, I mean, I follow tons of pro athletes, mostly other pro females, just because I think it's pretty inspiring to draw inspiration from others in the sport. But yeah, I would say at this point, it's considered a late start, beginning racing in my 20s, I guess, in college. But yeah, I like grew up playing soccer and doing swim team and track in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And then I moved to Durango for college. Honestly, not because of cycling. I moved here because I got a scholarship and then did a sprint triathlon and decided that I still hated running and swimming and I would continue to try to ride my bike. And then, you know, joined the bike team at the college, which just so happened at the time to be like the number one collegiate cycling program. And that really was sort of what fostered my, you know, entry into the sport. And then, yeah, I got onto a little local pro team with some big names like Howard Gratz and Sepp Kuss and Steven Davist and Teal Stetson Lee and some like big names in mountain biking and road. And yeah, we were on a little mountain bike team here in Durango. And then I quit and became a graphic designer, which is what I went to school for. And yeah, I like just decided to get back into the sport by doing some cross races, and single speed cyclocross was like the thing that I loved so much, and decided to like go for single speed worlds in Portland that year. And then I got a bunch of second places, and then weird timing, ended up signing my first pro contract at 28 with Specialized and 10 Speed Hero, which was a little boutique clothing company in Chicago. And they did this really cool design artsy collaboration at Specialized. And it was sort of this like collision of all my worlds, and was like the coolest thing that's ever changed my life and the trajectory of it. And then they folded the cyclocross team and they handed me a road bike and said, here, do gravel racing. And I just so happened to win the right race at the right time and was kind of thrust into the sport of gravel. But I mean, I think I was sort of destined for it because my technical skills were never quite at the level they needed to be for mountain biking. And I never really fit into the road scene. And so gravel it was. And here I am.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, I guess a little bit of a right place, right time element to that that we'll touch on a little more in a minute, I guess. But I'm curious about those early days of collegiate mountain bike racing. If I have it right, having not done a ton of mountain biking prior to that, really, and just sort of dove straight into the deep end there, how did that go? And how did you kind of tell us about it?
Yeah, I mean, Durango is good for mountain biking in so many ways. And it's also a really brutal place to learn how to mountain bike as like a young adult or old teenager, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, dirt there is not soft.
No, it's really technical here. And, you know, my fiance Dylan is like probably one of the best mountain bikers in town. And, you know, we were friends all through college, and he was one of the people I rode with, and my group of friends were all mountain bikers since they were super young. And it was a pretty rough entry. I mean, I did a lot of bike rides where I was just walking for half of it, you know, next to my mountain bike, because it was so hard. I was like learning to clip in and out and going to bike races on the weekends. So I definitely am like a throw myself head first into stuff, which, you know, it works out. And sometimes it's pretty painful mentally and physically. Probably more emotionally painful than anything. And now, you know, I've coached tons of women's camps and clinics all over the world. And, you know, what I tell them is like, mountain biking is objectively very challenging. Like, it is a really hard thing to learn. And I was still fairly young. I mean, I consider 20 learning how to mountain bike still pretty young, but it was pretty old for Durango and the sport of racing. So yeah, I just had a lot of like, a lot of pep talks on the trail, and a lot of tears were shed and frustration. you know, it's kind of rough, like racing. I was always like so pumped when it was like sort of an uphill finish on like a fire road, because it means that I could like catch somewhat of the like time I would lose on the descents. And, you know, I just never wanted, I was a bad mountain bike racer in some ways, because I hated like clogging everyone up on the single track descents. Like it is still like this thing I have had to get over now that I'm a professional and get paid to do this. And I'm not even one of the worst ones, but it's still this like fear that goes back to like when I was learning how to mountain bike, of like having this like long string of people behind me on the descents is horrible. So, and then I raced enduros for a little bit too, which is super funny to think about after my entry into the sport. But yeah, like in that chunk of time where I quit racing completely, was when Dylan was dragging me to all the enduros that he was racing, like all over the world. And truly some of them I had no business being at, like an EWS in New Zealand. I did a ton of different types of racing. I think I just kind of knew that I wanted to see the world through the biking lens. Like, it's not that I was like really that curious about the riding in all these places, but it was sort of the way I could see the world. Cause I was working and living in New Zealand at the time. So Dylan was coming out for the EWS. So I decided to sign up for the EWS as well, which I had no business being at, because it was terrifying. And I think I actually even had grip shifts at the time. So I like to think that I was the only one who completed the EWS with grip shifts, which is probably pretty fair.
Yeah, I'd say pretty good odds of that. What year are we talking here?
But you know, when was that? 2015? I mean, I think doing a lot of stuff that I was really bad at was, I know, like, not to put a silver lining on everything, but it really helped me learn some important lessons of like how to enjoy myself, even as an extremely competitive person. I am so competitive to the point where like I really still in my adult life can't really enjoy board games because I'm too competitive. And that checks out. Last weekend even, I'm 33, like still too competitive at board games. But it was really important for me to learn how to be in a sport that I was objectively bad at. But there's still something that I can learn and gain, even though I'm the one that's, scared to do the blind gap jump on the last, stage of the enduro and everyone else is riding it. But it's like, I guess I kind of discovered that like, okay, I can get last at this enduro and be a huge bummer because I'm bummed that I got last and I am upset about my performance and I'm not fun to be around because I'm mopey, or I can get last and I can enjoy myself and have a good time and make some friends and not be a bummer. And it was really, really painful and hard for me to do that because it was like this massive ego check, being in this environment that I was like clearly not ever going to be good at. But then I had to, learn how to enjoy myself and like find little things that I actually like really did a good job at. And, I probably won every transfer stage time.
There you go.
Yeah.
No, I like that a lot. And it's a hard thing to sort of figure out how to make peace with not being good at something that you want to be good at.
Especially as an athlete, like we're all sort of driven to like strive for, the top step, but like it was pretty clear like the world of gravity mountain bike racing is for a very specific type of person. And as is the world of endurance, like it's also kind of crazy to line up for a 200-mile gravel race in the middle of Kansas. So kind of two different personality types.
Right. And I mean, you've sort of clearly found your place in that dichotomy.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I'm good at the other one.
But yeah, I mean, tell us about just the journey to discovering gravel racing. You kind of touched on a bit of it already, but then you sort of were at this crossroads right at the same time that gravel racing as a discipline was really taking off and becoming a thing in the way that it has. And, as you sort of said, like you got just sort of handed a bike and told, go try this gravel thing. What did that feel like? And sort of both in terms of it just being this shift in what you were doing, kind of handed down from on high almost, and then as just figuring out what gravel racing really was as the sport itself was getting off the ground in a major way and finding its own identity and all that.
Yeah, totally. That's a good segue. I mean, after my first season of racing UCI cyclocross, I kind of felt like I was like starting to figure that out and pretty amped on racing. And then, you know, unfortunately with the rise of gravel, the fall of cyclocross sort of was simultaneously occurring. And yeah, Specialized handed me a bike that, you know, the Roubaix, which is sort of this like crossover between a road bike and a gravel bike. And they were like, hey, we want you to go race BWR. And I was like, great, Belgian waffle ride. Sounds like a good time. Like probably stop at the aid stations, get some waffles. Like truly thought it was just like, you know, meet the people, ride with some friends, like kind of chill, but it was like a really long way. So it was like 137 miles, which was about 37 miles further than I'd ever ridden before in one go. And as mentioned before, I enjoy kind of throwing myself into the deep end, as one says. But it's also super motivating because you're like, kind of takes the pressure off in some ways because you're like, well, I have no expectations because I have no idea if I can even finish this thing. And I was like straight off of the couch, essentially. You know, I was here skiing in Colorado and, you know, maybe like tootling around with my dog, like doing some runs. But it's like, it was like early May. I think it was like over Cinco de Mayo. So it's like pretty much winter until then. So like not a ton of training. And, you know, I like line up with everyone for the Belgian waffle ride. And it was like the most terrified I've ever been in any setting, including that enduro. Cause there's like 1,000 people doing this mass start on these open roads in California. And then they had this like traffic cone in the middle and like 1,000 people had to do a U-turn around this traffic cone. And then we were in single track on our bikes. And I was like, you know, suitcase carrying my bike, like cyclocross style, like trying to get around people. And I had no idea where anyone was. It's, you know, men and women start together. And, you know, I'm just like racing as hard as I can, you know, not knowing anything about racing endurance. I put like peanut butter and jelly sandwiches in my pockets and like had a couple water bottles, like no backpack or anything. Just figured I'd stop when I needed some water. And, you know, 3 or 4 hours into the race, I realized I caught one of my male teammates on Specialized and I was like, that's crazy. I must be doing okay. Like if I just caught Cody. And I was like, hey, do you know where any of the other women are? And he was like, no, you're winning, stupid. Sit in. And I had it was just chaos at the start. And I had no idea that I was winning this race. And yeah, like literally never raced with any of the women, didn't look back once, just crossed the finish line. And they were like, and Sarah Strum, which is not right. How you say my last name. And yeah, that was kind of it. And people were really stoked on just the fact that I won this random Belgian waffle ride. And I did get a waffle at the end. And that was sort of like, let's see, that was 2019. So it was sort of like at the peak of gravel. I mean, the field was like relatively stacked. Like I still race against a lot of those women who are on the podium with me. But definitely not to the level of Dial that it is now. Like you wouldn't go to BWR I wouldn't travel there without Dylan, my mechanic, and my crew. And like, you know, you have people handing you packs and feed zones, and it's just at this, you know, I just finished like all that training, which was not in the program before, and I'm still holding on. I'm still on the top, but it's, you know, I've had to sort of grow with the sport because naturally as people do, and as athletes do annoyingly, we like to push it and see how fast and how competitive. And to be totally honest, there's a lot of money in it right now. So
going into that, how much of an inkling did you have that you might actually be pretty good at this endurance racing thing? You know, you said you hadn't maybe even ridden your bike that far before ever. So like, just how completely astonishing was this to you? Or did it just feel like complete beginner's luck? What was the response?
Yeah, I kind of had this like, yeah, that's a good question. I had a couple of really like strong results like that chunk of time. So I think some of it was like some natural, like, not talent. I don't want to say that. Like, it's not like I lucked into it, but I, you know, unbeknownst to the people at BWR who thought I was this total beginner, I had been racing a lot in my past and like had this like pretty decent base of like experience. And you know, had also a new experience for me was being one of the better technical riders. So like there, I remember everyone was talking about this water crossing and this river crossing at BWR and everyone was like super nervous about it. And I was like kind of getting worked up. And then at the end of the race, I was like, oh shit, did I go the wrong way? Like, I don't remember this river crossing. Like, I remember everyone talking about it. And I realized that I just like wrote it.
Yeah, it just hadn't really like, registered.
Even think about it. Yeah, totally. So I would say like the type of terrain suited me. And also like, I think women in general are just kind of suited for endurance, to be honest. And like, the older you are, kind of the better you are at it. I think just biologically, like we're really like built for it. Like we can go a really, maybe not like the fat, like we're not like, it's a very different game, like women's racing and men's racing in all disciplines, but like especially ultra endurance and endurance. Like the longer the event, I think the gap between women and men start closing. And that's, you sort of see that with like Lael Wilcox and the racing that she does, which is like you're like literally staying up for like weeks at a time, but she'll beat all the men. I think like I definitely had the right skill set as far as like cyclocross, mountain biking, some road racing background too, and then I also like just enjoy that challenge of stuff, you know, and I've had to sort of find that feeling still in my current career, because everything, you know, with the Lifetime Grand Prix happening, like we know what those races feel like. There are no surprises. And I would say I feel like I sort of stick out in some ways in comparison with a lot of my colleagues, if you will, other racers, because I actually really, I like when I don't know what's gonna be out there. And I've learned through the last 7 years of racing that most athletes are fairly type A and they really like to know exactly what's out there and then prepare for it. But I'm like sort of the doomsday prepper of bike racers, where I'm like, I'm going to bring everything and then like hope for the best and expect the worst. And I think races like Unbound last year, where it was rainy and horrible and shitty, and you know, we had 5 miles of running in the mud, that is when I come alive. and then when I see people on the side just like melting and coming apart mentally and physically, it's like just gives me even more fire. Like the shittier it is, the better I do.
So after winning that 2019 Belgian Waffle Ride, did that, I guess once it kind of had settled in that you just won this damn thing and you had that realization, like, did that then have you just feeling fired up to go do more gravel racing? Did you not?
Totally.
Okay. Yeah. So like what came next after that?
Yeah. I'm trying to, it's a while ago now. it was kind of this like the Wild West, right? Like there were all these newer races, like this race in Oregon called the Oregon Trail Gravel Grinder. That's this like 6-day stage race that I was stoked on. And a race in Iceland was super cool. The Rift. I just was like kind of following where I was like excited to go compete. And like I had the opportunity to race Leadville that year for the first time, and had that was probably my proudest result, was getting second at Leadville my first year of doing it. And it just sort of unlocked this whole different, like I had never really like been competitive like at that level before. And so I do think that I was suited for this like multiple hour, you know, 4+ hours of racing. And now I'm like getting into like the 12 to 16 hours of racing, which I don't know if that's it for me, but Yeah, I think it just kind of like, it's fun to be good at stuff, you know? Like, and I'd always kind of been like, kind of medium. And yeah, I was like, that first year of racing, like, it was definitely this interesting mixture of like, women who are coming from an entire like professional career as a road racer into gravel, and the same with mountain biking. And so it was this these are women that I had followed all of my collegiate career and into like, you know, a couple years after. And so I like finally got to like race next to these women that I would have never thought that I would be at the same level as. So it was a super exciting time for me. And then, you know, I definitely got some shit from friends, mainly Sophia and Keegan, who are now the king and queen of gravel racing. I remember them just teasing me about being a gravel racer. And I was like, it's pretty fun. You can make a decent amount of money. Like, BWR, the year I won, they had a bigger prize purse for the women's race than the men's. So, which never happens. So it's kind of, it's been cool to like evolve with the sport and sort of help shape the sport too. You know, like now we get at a lot of the races, at least in the Grand Prix, we'll have our own, like the women have a separate start, which is helpful because the starts are chaotic. Like, as funny as it was that I like had no idea that I was winning, now that would induce some stress. I mean, it does. And it's really hard to keep track of. Oh, sorry. My dog is squeaking his ball outside of my door. But yeah, it's sort of, yeah, it's evolved into this different level of competition. And then the fairness question always comes up, you know, and especially with women's racing, because we're smushed in there with all the dudes. It's interesting. I think the next couple years, it's going to change and evolve a lot with like no drafting rules, or potentially even moving the pro racers onto a different day, which, you know, I think people think about that in two ways. And I sort of feel divided with that as well, personally, just because that is the part of gravel that I've actually really enjoyed. It's like racing with everybody. But yeah, it also, you know, sometimes is a bummer when you're like, oh, you know, I got fourth place and was alone all day, and first through third was with a group of dudes. So it is, I see both sides.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, I guess that's sort of one thing I wanted to, more broadly than the men and women racing together or not question, just wanted to get your thoughts on sort of just how the sport has changed over your time in it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's so new that it seems like things are evolving pretty quickly and have changed a ton, but it's also just this sort of thing where, like, does it feel like the sort of, I don't know if you want to call it the professionalization of it, and the fact that things are kind of bigger time now, feel like it's taken something away from what was fun about it in the first place? Or how does that all kind of come together?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, to be totally honest, I was, you know, a couple years ago, I was one of the people that was like, don't separate the men and the women's. Like, I like starting with everybody. It's the spirit of gravel, you know, the thing that everyone makes fun of. But yeah, I mean, it was like, it was the fun part for sure. Cause it's like, it was just totally different. It was like a different type of racing. But then, you know, there's, as I mentioned, you know, we all have professional contracts, and like, you know, there's a lot of money on the line, literally. And, you know, it helps to know who you're racing against and to see them. And so, like, you know, I've had to, like, as I said before, like, you sort of grow with the sport, and gravel is like very rapidly evolving, because I mean, it's like not sanctioned, and I've gone to the first two world championships of gravel, which has been really cool. But like, year one in Italy compared to year two last year was wildly different experience. And we can get into into that later too, because there's some hot topics with the women's race for that. But yeah, I think a lot of us, like I've been a part of some of the phone calls with the Lifetime. And as they like sort of work through like what is fair, because I mean, and I don't know for your listeners, like I'm sure they don't have any idea what the Lifetime Grand Prix is, but it's basically like three gravel, three mountain bike. Although now I think it's four gravel and three mountain bike races over 7 months. And at the end of the season, I think there's $300,000 prize purse. And then they score it a certain way. So it's sort of this like cumulative result that you carry through the year. And they're like pretty gnarly races. I mean, you have Leadville and Unbound are two of the hot races for sure. But yeah, this is the third year, and there's like a pretty interesting selection process that you have to go through to get chosen to be in the Grand Prix. So, and they make all these like fun YouTube videos about all of the reality show is what I call it. So yeah, I think like that is sort of has become this like pinnacle of the sport. And what's cool about gravel is like it's kind of started in the US just because, especially in the Midwest, and the reason that so many flock to Unbound, which I was trying to avoid ever doing that race because it never really like appealed to me when I like first got into the sport. I mean, 200 miles in Kansas, I was like, man, why are these dorks signing up for this thing? And after racing it a couple years, and last year I had an awesome result there, which I definitely never expected. I sort of get it. It's like this really gritty, weird experience out there. I mean, you start with 4,000 people start that race, and you're truly like in the middle of America. And there's like no aid station. It's like pretty rough. And you have, I mean, it's sort of turned into like NASCAR for the pros because, you know, there's two aid stations and your team has to be at those two. So it's a lot of like hurry up and wait. And it's really stressful for the minutes that the racers come through. And then it's super, super boring the rest of the time. And that's sort of how it feels to race it as well. but yeah, I think, I guess a long-winded answer to your question. I sort of support the fact that the racing has evolved into this, you know, no stopping in feed zones. You have crews there with packs. As much as I miss the good old days, which was truly like year one of like racing where you were like stopping and filling your own bottles yourself. It sort of simplifies it. And there's still some races that don't allow support crews like Steamboat Gravel. And I think we'll just see a lot of that. Like you'll have races that are like just merely catering towards the pros and getting these like fast times. And then you have the participatory the rest of the event, which is awesome. And the cool thing about gravel, I think the reason that it has become what it is it's less selective and intimidating like mountain biking. You know, you have to live in the mountains, you have to have access to somewhere that you can try mountain biking. And as I mentioned before, it's really intimidating and really hard to get good. I mean, I remember it was like 4 years before I was like, oh, this is how people have fun on this sport. Like I didn't even feel that for so long. And then you have road riding that's like, I mean, there's roads everywhere, but it's objectively terrifying to be on these roads next to cars. And that's like pretty intimidating for people. And then, I mean, gravel biking is sort of like the best and worst of both of those things, you know? And it gets people off the roads, but it's also pretty accessible. And then you can sign up for a gravel race as this, like, I think the reason people gravitate towards this 200 mile thing in Kansas is that it's sort of like the marathon of the cycling world, mm-hmm. where like people focus on one thing for the whole year and that's the thing. And then they can go back to their friends and family and colleagues and say like, yeah, I finished 200 miles on my bike. And it's kind of, you know, it's sort of special.
Yeah. That's it's a different version of
sorry there was a lot there
bike itch than I have these days anyway. I actually have done some endurance race XC races way back in the day, but it's been a very long time.
So. Well, it'll be there for you.
I mean, you sort of mentioned liking keeping things fresh and not necessarily being the most, I don't know the best way to how you'd put it, but not obsessively poring over the details of a given course long before and that kind of, at least that version of prep. And so, you know, how do you approach a race? I don't know, like, for example, any of the ones we've been talking about, you know, where you just have this enormous day ahead of you, and how do you plan for that? And how do you get yourself in the headspace to go just hurt for a long time?
Yeah, I think that's a good point, because I've often questioned, like, why and how I can do this sport. And I think for me, like, I mean, I prepare to a certain extent, you know, like, I'll look, now I pay attention to the mileage and where the aid stations are and have people helping me, figure out like how many calories to eat and how often and that sort of thing. But I kind of appreciate, and like going back to the Grand Prix, like those races are like very intense the whole time. So like you have to be on it to be competitive, you know, and especially in the overall, like, which is usually my goal. And you have to be like pretty dialed, but it, you know, I can only be so dialed. Like, I think at a certain point for me, like, I am not someone to go and like, make sure I know every single turn. And it's just like, to me, it's unnecessary, because like so much can happen out there. You know, I'll ride the start and the finish, which is usually the same thing. And then you just kind of like, I think it's all about mindset with endurance, to be honest. More so than like studying the course. Like, it's, you know, I got to have dinner with Jill Kittner, who has a very different type of racing, obviously. Like, her experience at a bike race is extreme focus, and like she has to be pretty rigid and like type A, because that's why she's amazing at it and has had many world championships to, you know, fill her trophy case with. And for me, I'm like, yeah, there is a certain level of that, but I like also can like miss my pedal at the start and it's not like the end of my race, you know? So like, but you also have to be a good problem solver. And to be totally honest, I think having ADHD really helps me, because I mean, truly, I'll like look down at my like computer and I'm like, whoa, that's crazy that 3 hours has already gone by. Like, only six more. And like, it doesn't, I just don't think about it. Like, you're always sort of like focused on like, who's ahead of me, who's behind me, how much am I eating, where's the aid station, do I have to pee? And those are sort of like, it's kind of like simple in a lot of ways, just because you have so much time out there. You know, I Dylan and I are getting ready after the season opener is, well, this weekend technically, but I have like three races and then a big race in Europe called the Traca, which is sort of like the biggest event that the Europeans put on aside from the world champs. But it's this 360 kilometer race that I did last year, which is, it's pretty amazing. It's around Girona, Spain. And I think like, it's just motivating when it's like a really cool course and it's like pretty dynamic. And like, there's some single track sections and like, I mean, you're out there for, I think I did it in 15 hours or 15 and a half hours last year. And I don't know, it's just like, you kind of, you just prepare as best you can. Like, I made a couple of errors, which cost me the win. But now I know. You just go back and try it again.
Yeah. To continue the thoughts on just kind of state of gravel generally and where things are going from here. I mean, you sort of touched a little bit on it just feeling like it requires a greater degree of preparation and more support and so on to succeed than it did not that many years ago. I guess, is that just principally because other folks are doing that and the bar's been raised, or I guess, what do you think has driven that? And does it feel like the status is kind of leveled off on that front, or is the bar just continuing to get ratcheted up in a way that it's becoming more and more involved still?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great question. I think naturally we had people then coming into the sport who had like a wealth of knowledge from their careers as pro XCO racers, world tour road racers. So you have men and women coming in from the highest level, you know, Olympians, coming into the sport, and they're just naturally at that level. Like, they don't know anything else. Like, they only know, like, I call them the marginal gains people, which I am now becoming one of those people because that's where the sport is. And, you know, my personal competitiveness has led me to, you know, hold on to that, you know, being one of the top racers. But I didn't come from that background, which is kind of a cool opportunity. It's a super cool opportunity to get to race at the highest level. But yeah, I mean, like, I've raced with the, you know, current Tour de Femme champion, you know, like Dani Vollering was at Gravel Worlds this year. And yeah, you have like the fastest women in the world competing. So naturally, they want to finish the race as fast as possible. And that requires, you know, this level of competition of like thinking through all these details of like, okay, the feed zones are this, but wouldn't it be faster if we did this, which is like not getting off your bike to fill your water bottles, having a, you know, separate pack prepared and you just grab it from the table. And like, you know, I know some athletes like practice their like their transitions for Unbound, which to me feels a bit like triathlon. So gravel could potentially be the triathlon of the off-road space. but it's only natural, right? Like if you have money on the line, and you know, a lot of us get paid through our sponsors. And also the prize purse is like nothing to like turn away from, for sure. And so I think with that, like within the rules of each race, like you actually have to read the race Bible because like rules differ, you know, between like a Belgian wall, like there's now a BWR series and now there's a lifetime series. And then there's like the UCI series, and each of them have their own rules and specifications. And SBT has their own sort of series and chunk of races, and they're all super different. Like SBT does not allow support from outside. And then the UCI is the UCI about it. So it's like, you have to, like, everything is super dialed and the course is actually marked. Cause that's a whole other thing. Like, to be a race promoter for gravel, you pretty much just have to design a GPX route and you're good to go. Like, there's not even like corners marked off. So a lot of the times, like, you know, people in the top five will take a wrong turn and that'll be, you know, a couple spots lost. So it is sort of still like the Wild West of bike racing, which is kind of, to me, it's kind of cool because you're always sort of entertained by new drama. You know, like there's always something going on. Sometimes it's like in the men's race, sometimes it's in the women's race, but hot topic items are usually feed zones, that sort of thing for men, and drafting issues within the women's race. And then you have like this weird like melting pot of bike racers. So you know, women from the road are like really savvy with like group dynamics, but it's really different. Like, you don't have a follow car. Like, you have to know how to change your own flat, and you don't have teammates, and you don't have race radios. And then mountain bikers, I don't know. I feel like for the most part, the mountain bikers have sort of represented at these races. Like, they do pretty well, especially if there's some technical piece. But yeah, I don't know if that answered your question.
No, it did. And yeah, it just makes a lot of sense that as the sport grows and becomes more prominent and the money involved gets bigger, just
people get more dialed. You know, it's like, you can't blame them. You kind of like, you can't hate the players, you can hate the game. And it's really up to the race promoters to decide what flies at their race and what kind of experience they want people to have. And if they want to make it feel equal to everybody, so you don't have to just show up with a huge crew, you can just show up with yourself and a bicycle and be competitive. Cause that's really what I was holding on to, that like original like idea of gravel racing. Like, it was really cool to like be able to like, especially coming from cyclocross, you know, this like incredibly gear intensive, like support intensive sport where you have to have multiple bikes, so many wheels, definitely a mechanic, if not two in the pits, like to be competitive even. And then I was just like rolling up to the start line at a gravel race. And it's like, great. This is awesome. I can be competitive and just like show up. And now it's definitely a different world, but, there's still like quite a few events out there that try to like make that barrier to entry at the pointy end of the sport pretty equal mm-hmm. for everybody, which is cool.
Yeah. That makes sense. And I guess along those lines a little bit, how does just sort of the overall health of the sport feel these days? You know, we've had like on the mountain bike side of things, the Enduro World Cups are going through contraction and clearly kind of struggling to find their way these days. And there's been, you know, obviously the overturn of broadcasting for mountain biking and everything that has come along with that. And does it feel like gravel's still booming? Or are you feeling some of the same pinches there? Or I don't know. You tell me, I guess, but
yes and no. I mean, in some ways I feel like we can only improve, and that's kind of inspiring, you know, like people are figuring out how to broadcast these races and then you have a slap in the face, like world champs last year, in Italy. And we found out the night before the race that they were not broadcasting only the women's race. So the men had it broadcast and the women did not. And this is a professional world championship event by the UCI in Italy. And the Italian race promoters were sort of pointing their fingers at the UCI and vice versa. And personally, I just held them both accountable. And I was just like, what the hell? Are you kidding me? Like, this is 2023 at the time. And I was like, this is unacceptable. So there's things like that where it's just like, are you kidding me? Like, this is so many steps backwards. And so that is definitely disheartening. But then like, I, at the same time, like you see these race promoters figuring out like how to like, you know, bring the fandom along. And there's a pretty strong group of fans, you know, in the sport of gravel. And, I mean, you know, road racing has been around for so long and it has such deep roots in Europe, and, you know, nothing can really touch that level at the moment. And mountain biking, you know, is weirdly on like its own journey as well. But yeah, I think gravel is still like has some huge hurdles to overcome in bringing more people along for the ride. And I, you know, it's still such a baby in the world of cycling fandom. But yeah, I think in some ways they've done a good job creating this, you know, this sport that serves both professional level, like the pointiest end of racing. And then, you know, you have people showing up on a mountain bike as their first ever bike race. So like it sort of has to serve these two sides, and that's kind of what's special about it. But yeah, I mean, I think personally, what I see for the future, and who knows, but there's just been so many events that have popped up that like, as athletes, we definitely get like pulled in a lot of different directions now. Cause like, I almost wonder if there's a gravel race every single weekend of the year. Like, I think like there's seriously like that many, like obviously like you would include the local stuff, but it was sort of just this boom right after the pandemic when people were like getting super amped on it. And I think that some of those races will probably start to struggle to find participants enough to like make a profit on. And so you'll start having, you know, some of those races fall back, and the big ones will remain big. And those are the like little bricks that will make up the whole house of, you know, gravel racing. But it's funny because it's like never like one huge thing. It's like always the accumulation of lots of little things and little decisions. And, you know, a decision like, you know, lifetime figuring out like how to enforce drafting policies, like that's going to shape their races for sure. But then I almost guarantee you that other race organizers will do something similar or like take a stand and do something totally different than that. So like, it's all sort of like this give and take, in the racing. And, you know, not going to discredit the fact that like Europeans are figuring out how to put on these cross race or these gravel races, excuse me. And it's a really different level of racing. Like you see like four fans at the finish line, but it's just like this gnarly, intense race with like Wout van Aert will show up to one or like Demi Vollering will show up. And you're just like, damn, there's like these like heavy hitters like in these gravel races. But then there's like two people at the finish. Like it's just this weird mixture. And, you know, weirdly, like the US has done something better for once, but the European racing is definitely catching on, and the UCI, once the UCI is involved, and like, you know, who knows, like maybe someday it'll be an Olympic sport. But yeah, only time will tell.
Indeed. And well, that's kind of a good transition into the last thing I wanted to ask you before I let you go here, which is just, so, you know, given that there are so many races you could go do and, you know, a calendar and energy levels and all that you need to balance, what are your plans and goals for 2024 looking like?
Yeah, thanks. So I will be competing in my third Lifetime Grand Prix. And, you know, we'll see how it goes. Like the strategy with the Grand Prix, in my opinion, if you want to win it, and I've now gotten third and fourth in the overall. If you want to win it, you have to pretty much dedicate your whole calendar to it because, you know, it's pretty intense. But I'm going to do the opposite and do the minimum amount of races required because I'm also signed up for the Gravel Earth series, which is another series that's more European based and sort of more adventure-y. So there's cool races like the Traca 360 that I mentioned that I've done, and then a stage race in Kenya, which I'm really excited for, just because I'm an opportunist and I have never done anything like that. And it looks amazing. And I want to race next to zebras and giraffes.
Yeah, that sounds okay.
We're pretty excited to get to do that one. And then potentially going over and doing the Rift again in Iceland. And the series final of that is back in Spain in Barcelona. And then, yeah, just sprinkling a handful of like other cool races. Like this weekend, I'm going to Mid-South, which is in Stillwater, Oklahoma. And I've been told it has like the energy of single speed worlds, but in a gravel race. So I'm very curious.
Bold plan.
My friend Bobby puts that race on and it looks like an amazing time. And yeah, you'll see me at Leadville 100 again. That race always like, it's the one that I'm like, I know I can win this. and I'll be at Unbound and Big Sugar and all the big guys. Mm-hmm. So,
well,
yeah, lots of miles to be raced. My biggest season yet.
A lot of time in the saddle there.
A lot of time in the saddle. Unfortunately, a lot of, we no longer take pee breaks in the women's race scene, and you just have to pee in your pants. So I tell kids that if you want to get into gravel, just practice peeing in your pants.
Perfect.
It's cool.
Well, I don't know how we're going to top that for a note to end on.
I was going to say, what a way to end the podcast. People won't remember my name, but they'll remember that women have to pee in their pants. And I single-handedly killed gravel racing.
Oh, man. Well, Sarah, this has been great. Appreciate you taking the time to chat. And good luck with everything this year.
Thank
it's going to be cool to be following along.
Awesome. Thanks, David. Thanks for the opportunity.
All right. That's it for this edition of Bikes and Big Ideas. And as always, we would very much appreciate you leaving us a rating or review in an Apple Podcast to help keep the show going and growing. I'd also like to say thanks to Sarah for the conversation, thanks to Taylor Ahern for producing the episode, and thanks to you for listening. From all of us at Blister, please take good care of yourself, everybody else, and we'll be back again next week. Bye, everybody.